Off the Ball, GAA.
Basic conversion rate, Mick, when it comes to the start of the week, which is remarkable what Limerick do, because, you know, it's 18 out of 19 finals under John Kiely that they have won. So generally, when they get into a winning position, Limerick lay down the hammer at that point.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus, see gamblingcare.ie.
Right, welcome along to Inside the Odds, our Premier League preview show on Off the Ball in association with NoviBet. It's Mick McCarthy here, joined again this week by David Wilson and by Shane Hannan. Lads, this is like peak Premier League weekend. Not only have we got, like, it's almost like they haven't spread it out well enough. We've got like title decider showdown, which like the whole weekend builds to 4:30 Sunday, live and off the ball, with commentary team of Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr, live from the Etihad Stadium. But before that, you've got Merseyside Derby with, like a pretty big one, especially on the Liverpool side of things. Everton also chasing Europe. You have Chelsea versus Manchester United, oftentimes the number one tie of a weekend, relegated down to possibly the third biggest this week. And then you've got the usual relegation hilarity and Spurs in a must-win game at home to Brighton. Roberto De Zerbi's old club in his second game in charge. It's an unreal weekend, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got Leeds, who can possibly take themselves out of maybe the relegation hunt as well. So yeah, it's kind of been, we had like 4 or 5 weeks there between like the international break and the FA Cup weekends where kind of nothing was happening, and now it seems we're all in the race to get everything done and finished as quick as possible. It's like, I think it's 2 months to the World Cup today as well.
Yeah, there's that day in the summer, isn't there, where the opening,
wow,
like the open is on, the World Cup final is on the same day, am I right in saying? There's a GAA championship, there's a big day in the summer anyway.
The World Cup final and the hurling final's on
that's
the same
what
day.
It is.
Yeah.
Crazy. And one of the golf majors, I think it's the open possibly, it would be.
God, that's mad. It used to be the Munster final and the World Cup final was, if it fell on it would be the same day, like, yeah.
On same time sometimes, wasn't it? Like 4 o'clock usually, or the World Cup final has been on, and I remember one year it was definitely clashing with a huge.
Well, I was at the Munster final in '98, the Clare and Waterford game, and ended up like getting back. The match was already underway, and watching it in like a pub in like Bursley or somewhere like that. Do you know what I mean? Like watching France's. That was like nobody saw that coming. France beating Brazil 3-0 in that game. But yeah, we've gone off topic already. Fair play to us. Brentford versus Fulham starts the weekend off. Brentford, like, you know, definitely chasing Europe. It's definitely still there. One of those teams you felt needed to win last week, and of course they got a 2-2 draw, Brentford and Everton, but still alive for both of them. That's 12:30 tomorrow. The 3 o'clock kickoffs, Leeds Wolves at 3 o'clock, Newcastle Bournemouth at 3 o'clock, probably the most... the Eddie Howe derby, but other than that, nothing to play for, probably the only game.
Yeah. Interesting though that Kaziri Ola has been linked with the Newcastle job now, because obviously he's leaving at the end of the season, so it's even got its own kind of storyline as well.
It is the only game though that doesn't have something on the line this weekend, which is mad, like at this late in the season. But anyway, then you have Spurs Brighton 5:30, Chelsea United 8 p.m. Saturday, so huge day tomorrow. Then on Sunday you've got Villa Sunderland 2 p.m, Forest Burnley also at 2 p.m, and Everton Liverpool, as mentioned before, Phil Egan and Owen Doyle on commentary and off the ball on that one. Monday night you have Palace West Ham 8 p.m. And of course, the big one, Steve Owen, Brian Kerr will be over at the Etihad for Man City versus Arsenal, 4:30 p.m. on Sunday. We're going to start with that game. That's the big game of the weekend, Man City versus Arsenal, Sunday, 4:30. This is also the game of the week, which means NoviBet will offer up to €10 free bet if your bet builder loses on the biggest Premier League match of the weekend. Every weekend, NoviBet are offering the best value in football betting. It's a risk-free bet builder on all the biggest Premier League and Champions League matches. It is also the game, lads, for, you're waiting for this one, the off-the-ball bet builder of the week. Do you know how close I got last week? 7-1 shot on the Chelsea City game.
Don't tell me you were a card off or something.
Yellow card off.
Is that
great show.
Now, the fourth card happened in the 98th minute and I was over 4.5.
Right.
But who's to say something else wouldn't have happened? Or there was three cards for a long time in that game. I think Chelsea got the third card like early in the second half. So I thought it was sorted.
What happened to
basically
this card after the full time whistle? Counts, presumably counts.
Oh, maybe that was what that was then. I was not watching by that stage. It was 3-0.
Yeah.
So I was following along on the app. Anyway, look, I'm going to go and better it this week. I've gone a little bit more conservative. Okay, I'm looking for a tight game But I think it's going to be hard to watch game, to be honest. Better to listen to, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Lots of corners, cards, not too many goals. I also really can't see City losing, but I've kind of chickened out of backing them on that, not to lose totally. So my conservative bet builder this week is over 9.5 corners, over 4.5 cards. I've gone back to the well on that one. Under 4.5 goals, and Manchester City plus 2. So City not to lose by more than a goal.
Under 4.5 goals, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's going to be 2-1 or 2-0.
Yeah.
Personally, but, you know, there we go. Man City plus 2, just in case Arsenal win a 2-1. Comes out 5-2, and look out for a possible price boost on the Novi Bet app this weekend. Any objections there? How do we see this game going?
I think we're possibly going to all say the same thing. It feels like the momentum has swung. Like, if you just look at the Premier League table at the start, fast forwarded to this point in the season, and we were sitting here, we'd be thinking, well, geez, yeah, this Arsenal team can certainly get something. But it's just, there's just something about the, like, you can tell by Arteta's demeanour in the press conferences that he's getting worked up now at this stage of the season, which is absolutely his want and is fair, because he's in a serious position. But he has to G his players up. And I'm not sure playing TikTok edits at training on a big screen behind the players is the way to go and go about it. But that's his decision. And now it's squeaky bum time. Like, a draw here is a pretty good result for Arsenal. Like, it's kind of like the United Chelsea game. A draw for United would be, you know, you just want to keep your rivals at bay with X amount of games left. But yeah, I find it very, very difficult to see Arsenal get anything from this one. Like, City are not going to pull away with it, but yeah, I actually agree with you. I'd love to disagree for the virtues of entertainment here, but yeah, I think a City.
Did you see that the Arsenal Sporting second leg was one of the lowest watched Champions League knockout games of all time?
Really?
Well, only 5 million viewers worldwide. Now, it was up against, like, a marquee game that everybody wanted to watch. That's fine. Like, even RTE choosing Madrid Bayern over English team in close knockout tie was, you know, it was one of those things in retrospect, of course, but actually I'd imagine that was a tough conversation that they had. It's not an automatic thing, but at the same time, it also does go to say, it's like, people are looking for any excuse not to watch Arsenal at the moment.
Yeah, like, I had the Bayern Madrid game on the big screen, and I had the Arsenal game following on my phone, but even like that, I was like, this is nothing happening here. Like, and there's never really anything happening in Arsenal games. It was like two different sports almost, between Arsenal Sporting and Bayern and Real Madrid. And I know Arteta's got quite defensive over, you know, he's like, come on guys, we should be happy we're in a Champions League semi-final, we're top of the league by 6 points and have an opportunity to go and put the marker down against Man City. But yeah, the style of football, because they have such a nervous and defensive style of football, and they're relying on kind of the small margins of set pieces and stuff like that, it's just made the whole thing more tense, more nervous. Yeah. And I think one of the benefits this weekend actually is Arsenal playing away from home, and see if they can do something at Man City. But they haven't won at the Etihad in the league since 2015, so they have a bad record there. But what an opportunity it is for them to go and kind of do something about it.
Do you know what it is as well? Like, I almost feel like the Arsenal sports psychologist now is going to, over the next few weeks, really earn their crust, because I think of the last hole of the Masters last year, and afterwards Rory McIlroy is saying how Harry Diamond pulled him to the side before, I think it was before the playoff started, or that's before the last hole, and he said even after he'd let Justin Rose back in, you would have taken this position at the start of the week, and it just calmed Rory McIlroy down. Even though Arsenal have been so hard to watch, and recently the momentum seems to be swinging back to Man City, Arteta needs to sit down with his players this week and say, imagine taking this position at the start of the season. You're going to be in the Champions League semi-finals. Yeah. You never know what happens there. You're top of the league heading into a big game against Man City. So even though it all feels like it's negative around Arsenal at the minute, they've taken your arm off for this position. The players need to get in that mindset.
Playing terribly, which is a hard thing to turn around, but you're ultimately right. The league is not blown yet by any means.
Yeah.
You know, even if they did lose on Sunday, psychologically, it's hard to come back from. Points-wise, it's not hard to come back from at all. They're going to be on the same team. But it'll end up being the same goal difference if City win their games in hand. But, like, Arsenal have a much easier run-in.
Yeah.
And a much easier, and should absolutely be backing themselves to win every game between now and the end of the season after Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's like, but again, it's more of a psychological thing. And it's funny you're saying that, like, Arteta's getting a little bit angry in press conferences and stuff. I'd love to see him actually be angry. I'd love to see him be, he always seems fuming, but it doesn't seem to come out in a siege mentality.
No.
It doesn't ever seem to be. It's like, why are they not in there just like screaming? It's like, oh, the world wants us to lose this title. Like, yeah. Let's go and show them what you're made of. And I know that sounds insanely old school and like, you know, almost rudimentary, is it? But I feel like it's like all that stuff can't be the only way you run sports teams anymore.
Yeah.
But it can't disappear completely. It just feels like that sort of psychological element to what Arsenal need is just completely missing because we've got a stats and gimmicks manager.
Yeah. Like, it's interesting, like you go back and look at that, you know, the Amazon documentary that Arsenal done that a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And Arteta, one of the big things was you got to be brave, but you got to be brave on the ball and in possession. You got to be willing to take the ball and to take risks with the ball and to do it so that you have a greater attacking threat at the opposite end of the pitch. And Arsenal are just not like that at the minute. They're playing safe passes all the time. Declan Rice is passing backwards. His form has dropped off a lot, I think, the last couple of weeks in particular. They look quite tired. But I don't know, it's just, how do you flip that kind of psychology of like, well, we're holding on, and now we actually have to kind of be the aggressor here, and now we have to put our foot down. And to change that, I think, is just a really difficult thing to do. And I'm not sure whether Arteta has the...
But I wonder, is he the block? And something like... I know we're being suggestive when we're talking about Arteta a lot of the time when we don't know, but there are questions based on what we've seen rather than assumptions that we know what's going on. But is he the block for Arsenal not to be able to flick that switch? Because we've seen teams before, and it's like, these are all high-level professional footballers. Arsenal are a really, really good football team. They're like probably the best team in England. Really, really good players. I don't buy that they can't just go out and play in a more positive... and less kind of conservative and fearful way. But I just don't buy it. I just don't buy that they can't do it if that decision was made. And I just think we're sticking to our guns here. And unfortunately, you know, the ship is getting bombarded here and you're going under.
Yeah.
But we're sticking to our guns and we're going to stay and we're going to stick to the plan. Sometimes the plan needs to be ripped up in the middle.
Yeah, and like we every week tune into Arsenal expecting to see something different, and we're not going to get anything different between now and the end of the season. Who knows next year if they're champions and decide to try something different? But they probably won't. Like Donnarumma has as good a keeper as he is, he's been flaky enough under set pieces. Like again, Arsenal's strengths, they're just going to bombard him. Like it's going to be one of those classic Arsenal. It's hard to see, as you say, Mick. It's hard to see this being any more than a couple of goals. Yeah. Certainly a goal in it.
Do you remember even the first game that these two sides played against each other? It was a 1-1 in the Emirates kind of early on in the season, but it was a really poor game. Mm. And City were just as bad as Arsenal when it came to an attacking kind of threat.
Arsenal fell behind. Yeah.
And it's funny, actually, if this game finishes 1-1 on Sunday, that matches the score at the Emirates early in the season, and that could open up the possibility that the title could go to a playoff. Now, it's still a little bit unlikely because City have to obviously catch up on the points, finishing level at Arsenal. They also have to be level on goal difference and goals scored. But they're only one goal apart in terms of output, and Arsenal have a 4-goal advantage.
Is there a head-to-head tiebreaker at some point?
No, like if it finishes on goal difference and goals scored.
And they draw the two games.
But that's what I mean. So there is eventually a head-to-head tiebreaker down the list, so it would need both games to be 1-1.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
If it's nil-all, is there an away goals?
I don't know. But I think so.
That'd be harsh,
wouldn't it? Yeah. Like, imagine when...
But you have to say, it's better than separating. Well, a playoff would be great, but it's better than separating by, like, game drawn knocks or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But even saying all that, like, City will benefit this week from not playing in the Champions League. Like, one of the benefits of getting knocked out by Real Madrid is they can kind of focus completely on the Premier League. I don't know. When we get to this kind of part of the season and City were like chasing for titles, they all click into gear. There's a certain kind of humming about them. They all kind of, you know, the interplay between the attacking players in particular all kind of just clicks into gear, and it all just seems like it's a well-oiled machine. Mm. I still don't really see that with City. I know they were good against Chelsea last week, but in the second half, in the first half, they weren't great really.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say though is, and I wanted to talk a bit more about City than we normally kind of seem to be just hyper focused on Arsenal. Their last three games was the League Cup final win over Arsenal, one of their best performances of the season. Then they had the 4-0 FA Cup win over, like, a diabolical Liverpool.
Yeah.
And a 3-0 away win against Chelsea, who were also
awful
and are on an awful run. But at the same time, it still was Liverpool and Chelsea.
Yeah.
And they have been on this rampage, I suppose, for their last three or four games against top teams. Even psychologically going in and taking care of business against them makes them, I think, feel a bit more like Manchester City again. And you have then Cherki's playing his best football since he joined them. Semenyo has been, like, we all thought he was the guy to get, he was the best signing, but I think he has been better than expected, even though he was kind of well expected. Gahey has been absolutely what they needed at the back, where they would never keep the same two centre backs. Mm-hmm. Everybody's always injured.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, everything just feels at the plate. Like, Rodri's getting fit. Like, you know what I mean? We're seeing him not quite be Ballon d'Or Rodri yet, but he's back to passable, decent midfield player again, which he wasn't when he was getting games earlier in the season.
Yeah.
Doku, hit and miss. I don't know if we'll even see him on Saturday, but he was good at the weekend.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. There's just a lot. There's a lot there. Haaland's
form still isn't where Haaland's form is expected to be. Doku was obviously brilliant at the start of the season, and then he had, like, kind of hollowed out in the middle of the season, and obviously scored last week. He looked a bit better, a bit more dangerous. But I still wouldn't be reading too much into Chelsea's performance, Liverpool's performance, and Arsenal's performance in the League Cup final was pretty terrible as well. And obviously the goalkeeper making those errors that kind of cost them the game.
It's a settled enough team though for City, which we would rarely have seen. So I think maybe Doku of the front seven. Sorry, not front seven. Well, the front five or six. Doku is the only one that's probably up in the air this weekend, isn't it? Like that it's him or I don't even know who would come in there really, but
Foden or Cherki went wide.
Cherki will probably play 10. Semenyo will play in the right. Haaland will play, and then it'll be Bernardo and Rodri behind him.
Yeah. And is Nico O'Reilly fit? Presumably
Nico O'Reilly playing left back, I'd imagine.
Seems that he is. And, like, Nico O'Reilly has been the key to Man City's good performances over the last couple of weeks. So he obviously scored the goals against Arsenal in the cup final as well. So does he play as a number 10 or play inside left as well? That's something to be...
Could do and play a different left back.
I know. Ruben Dias looks like he's back fit as well. So that's another centre back they have to the Arsenal. Like, Man City, you know, with the money they've spent and the players they have and the coach that they have and the owners that they have, they should be winning this Premier League title. They've been quite poor all season by their standards. And somehow, because Arsenal never put their foot down and never capitalised on when City kind of drop points here and there, that somehow Man City are still in this title race. I think Guardiola is going to be absolutely chomping at the bit on Sunday to put on a performance. And when City have been in this position before, I remember a few years ago against Bayern Munich in the Champions League where they just all clicked into gear and they're absolutely phenomenal. I think we could see City playing really excellent football this Sunday.
I feel like we're also kind of sneaking into, because all the talk is Arteta, as you say, and Arsenal. There's a chance we're sneaking into the last six games of Pep Guardiola's City tenure. Like, does he decide, you know, if they win the league, walk away on a high before the Chargers crack comes in, and he really has to deal with that in any sense? I wouldn't blame him whatsoever. Maybe he's done a clap and told the team already, who knows?
And a domestic treble he'd be having his eyes on as well. Like they were kind of unheard of, and then Guardiola has done one.
He's done it once, it was never done before. United didn't do it in the Ferguson era, thanks to Aston Villa 94, Wembley, Ferguson's favourite team. But it was one of those things that, because the European, you know, the United 99 treble had become such a thing that City did it almost without anybody noticing.
Yeah.
But I think actually this year it could be a bigger deal, because nobody thinks of this City as the dominant. Yeah. That was right in the middle of their four in a row team.
Yeah.
Everyone expected them to win every competition. It was all about whether they could win the Champions League or not.
Yeah.
It's a very different City team now. You win three trophies this season.
Mm. Yeah. You're coming to the end of the cycle of the team. Like, Bernardo Silva obviously is on his way. We kind of knew that over the last few weeks. Rodri's still, I know he's back a little bit better than what he was. He's still...
And he could be off to Real Madrid anyway.
He could be. So, as regards kind of tactically this game, like, do Arsenal just give Man City the ball and sit in?
City only had like 30-something percent possession, like when these teams met earlier in the season. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was 32.8% possession.
And they were very keen just to like let Arsenal come onto them and try and have Haaland running behind.
Yeah.
Just a reminder on that game as well. So that was an Arsenal team that was in very, very good form and a City team that was in very bad form. And everybody was very critical of Arsenal's performance that day because, again, it felt like they didn't really go for it. Now, they did have to in the end because City went ahead.
Yeah.
And Arsenal rescued the game and then, I don't know, kind of went back into their shell a little bit. And there is just this feeling, and obviously that was the charge put at them the season before by Arsenal, by Manchester City, was that, you know, they were happy enough to come and take the draw. And we all know what happened after that. So, again, conservatism, it will only get you so far, you know, but it might be enough this year. Who knows? Again, just looking at this game then as well, I think Arsenal will certainly try to strangle it. It'll be low ball and play time. It'll be, I think I'm fairly confident in the over 9.5 corners, over 4.5 cards, under 4.5 goals. And I just, again, if Arsenal win it, it'll be by one goal. So Manchester City plus two, that's a 5-2. That's the off-the-wall bet builder for this game this week. And again, NoviBet will offer up to a €10 free bet if your bet builder loses on the biggest Premier League match of the weekend, every weekend. Everton-Liverpool. Liverpool just, like, what a game for them to have after this week. Another dramatic week in the world of Arne Slot. They lose Ekitike, obviously, sadly, for the rest of the season. I don't know, he's up to 50 minutes availability now this week after midweek, who knows?
Yeah.
But it's also, like, just not the game for them at the moment, is it? They got 3 points against Fulham last week, but otherwise their form has been absolutely woeful. And then they have to go to a really in-form Everton team.
Yeah.
Who'll be delighted to have them at the Hill Dickinson for the first time ever.
There's a touch of the Sunderland fans absolutely desperately wanting to finish ahead of Newcastle about this, because Everton are, what, they're 8th position, they're 5 points behind Liverpool. There is an outside chance that Everton could still catch Liverpool. You know, if they win this weekend, they're back to 2 points behind them. There's absolutely no doubt that could happen. The Hill Dickinson, like, they just the atmosphere hasn't. It's not what Goodison was. They're trying to turn the wall in behind, like the yellow wall, the Dortmund yellow wall. It's just not materialised that way. But the form has definitely improved. And if you fancy anyone to get a 7th place finish in the Premier League or to sneak a European place, it's probably David Moyes. Yeah, they're going to be mad up for this one. And look, Liverpool have found something last week, but can they keep it going? The problem all season has been consistency, so it's just hard to see that going.
So they found something last week. What do you think of this, David, right? So I watched that game on Saturday night, and I know that they were putting out a team with an eye for the PSG second leg, right? But Salah had probably his best game in 6 months. Ngamoa looked absolutely ready for prime time. I think Gakpo had his first decent game that I've seen him have in months. The whole Liverpool, the look of them, again, it wasn't quite a false line with Gakpo. He was playing as a striker, but it was less of the kind of like Ekitike, you know, just it suited, I think, Salah a little bit better. There was a little bit more room. And then they go out on Wednesday night and go back to the team again, even weirder with Isak involved as well. Yeah. I just couldn't believe that they didn't play Salah. I was really surprised not to see him when I actually didn't see the team news reading. I turned in like 3 minutes past eight.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for Salah on the pitch. I don't understand why he's not there. I know he's not himself and I know he's not his best, but it just feels like every decision Slot makes is just off.
Yeah.
It feels to me anyway.
Everything he's trying, it doesn't work. Every decision he makes ends up being wrong, I think, unfortunately for him. He's just in that kind of moment at the minute. But like you say, Salah is the one to surprise him not to start against PSG. I thought Ngamoa.
Absolutely.
Rio Ngamoa.
I'm less surprised because of who the manager is and because he's a 17-year-old kid. But in terms of form, 100%.
Yeah, like when he kind of broke through and scored that goal against Newcastle early on in the season, you thought, well, he's going to play like quite a lot of games this year, and he's going to be used, you know, as maybe the first sub on or the second sub on, or he's going to start a couple of games in the Champions League or in the Carabao Cup. And it just hasn't really materialized. And I think it's been one of Slot's biggest errors this year is to not introduce this player into the team, because he's electric. The goal he scored last week was absolutely brilliant. Everyone knows he's going to cut inside on his right foot, but everyone, you know, struggles to stop that from happening. The team during the week, starting Isak and then even just saying publicly, oh, he's only fit for 45 minutes, is just a joke. Like, and think this is, I said, I think a week or two ago here, that this is the end of Arne Slot. Like, this is, I think, just unfortunately for him, you may as well just get rid of him now.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
And I have a feeling they're going to keep him for another season.
Like, but there's no, what's the evidence? Why would you keep him? Like, I know he won the league title last year, but this has been one of the worst title defences in a long time of any English team. There were like, people say, oh, you know, they give PSG a bit of a game during the week, but they did. PSG were pretty comfortable, I thought, in the first half. Even when Liverpool had the ball in the second half, I still thought PSG were comfortable.
Liverpool had got that penalty,
which wasn't a penalty.
No, fair. Yeah. I understand, but it was given by the referee. So, like, it is a decent hypothetical. It wasn't going to be overturned. Things could have lifted. Like, that was one of those ones where, they probably just didn't show enough. And they were well beaten. Like, it was a 4-0 hammering.
Yeah, it was.
Over the course of two legs by a much better team. And when they played last year, where people were critical of Slot and people said that they didn't do enough, and, you know, it's all very well talking about, like, you know, the best game ever, but did you win? They lost that tie in penalties last year.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
Yeah.
You know, they've completely capitulated.
Yeah. Even just like Joe Gomez coming on and then coming off and now he's out for the weekend. Like, it's just been, like, what's happened to, like, last year they basically didn't have any injuries, and this year it's just been injury after injury after injury. And obviously Ekitike during the week is, unfortunately for him, for France, for anyone who enjoys watching football, that he's obviously going to be out for quite a long time. And for that to happen when you're already in a position where you're kind of, you know Isak's going to come off after, 45 minutes, which I thought was just crazy.
Why is he starting? Like, I feel like Friday isn't the time for this conversation because it's been non-stop all week, but I just haven't been on. It's mental.
Yeah,
what are you doing? Like, you're starting a player and then saying that he's only going to be there for that. But he's also a player with, like, no form and no fitness. And, like, that's your answer.
Yeah.
It's like you're chasing the game against PSG and you're leaving out your, like, probably the best Premier League player that this club has ever had.
Yeah. Bizarre.
You know, if you're doing it on, like, oh, well, maybe he catches fire because, like, we spent a lot of money on him and we'll get a half out of him. Maybe he's the man. Well, maybe Mo Salah's the man. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I understand he's not in form either, but there's more chance of him taking, you know, like, catching fire than there is Alexander Isak.
Oh, I don't know. Mo Salah's been terrible. Like, I think
but
he's,
you know,
been,
what I mean, though?
I know, it's just, like,
where are you getting the evidence that Isak is going to do it except for a hunch as well? Like, you know?
Yeah, I know, but even, like, his first touch when Salah came on it, like, he got in behind once and the old Salah would have just been like touch, like shot, and he just took a heavy touch and he cleared it.
I think he did all right. I know what you're talking about that touch, but if you look at the stats around that game, around the tie even, where Salah came out as a substitute in just the second leg, not used the first leg, he is the most of nearly everything. Most expected assists, all of that kind of stuff in that tie from any player, including PSG. Like, Salah is... he's doing stuff. He's not to his level that we expect.
I don't know.
But again, he's better than donkey striker who basically gave up playing football.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see it, to be honest. But
all right,
the eye test,
the hunch.
Yeah, but this week, like, Everton have a serious opportunity. But when Everton have had serious opportunities to beat Liverpool in the past, they've kind of folded. So, and you're obviously moving into a new stadium and you're thinking, you're looking for that one big statement win or that one big statement performance that kind of beds you into, like, this is our new home ground, this is our new fortress, like, is this the weekend for Everton?
Well, I feel like they've been setting up for this because, and this is why I would really fancy them this weekend, not necessarily even to win, but I'd be very worried about getting 3 points if I was Liverpool, because Everton had a shaky enough start to the season and people kind of haven't noticed how much they've turned their form around. In recent times, like, they have beaten, they hammered Chelsea. When was this? That was the other side of the international break. That's a good result away to Brentford. They did lose to Arsenal. That was like that 2-0 on the record books doesn't really reflect what that game was. They basically frustrated Arsenal for 89 minutes or whatever it was. They beat Burnley, they beat Newcastle away. They had lost to Manchester United before that. Their general form has just been very good. They're hard to beat. I don't know. I think that Moyes has kind of made them into one of those David Moyes teams that are not quite where they need to be. They don't have a striker. I don't really buy Beto, I have to say, or, you know, but Dewsbury Hall's been a really good sign. Yeah. And Jai is a very good player.
Brilliant.
They have attacking options, I suppose, yeah. You know, and they're solid in defence. Yeah. Like, I thought Michael Keane was finished 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And he just fits into, I thought his legs were gone, genuinely. And it's just like, he fits into what Moyes needs. I don't think Tarkowski and Keane, with Jake O'Brien as a right back and Mikulenko or whoever it is at left back, is working as a back four for almost any other manager, but it just works for everything.
Yeah. No, even like the game against Brentford last week, I think Brentford would have been disappointed that they threw away the lead twice. But still, Everton made it really difficult for them. And even like I know you're saying about Beto, but involved in 5 goals, 4 goals, 1 assist in his last 5 Premier League outings. So
he's not, doing the job for
him. He's not the most pleasing striker on the eye, but he does do a job. And will he relish going up against Konate and Van Dijk? I think he's the type of player that, and we've seen it before in the past, that he kind of is. So
the big lads are joy playing the big lads. Yeah. Basically. Yeah.
What do you reckon then? Do you think Everton could win?
I'm along similar lines to you. I think it's going to be very difficult for Liverpool to win this game.
Yeah.
I'm not saying whether it's going to be a draw or an Everton win, but I do think sitting the fence maybe with a score draw on this one. There's not that it's a fortress at all, but Everton just have something in recent weeks that would make you think twice with Liverpool.
Yeah, there's been a lot of draws in this fixture. I think the last 8 meetings, one win, 6 draws and 1 loss for us. The team, so yeah, I don't know. Like every time you'd back Everton, they let you down. That's kind of
what
happens.
I can't argue with that.
Like if Liverpool actually go out there and try and play football, I think Liverpool win the game, even this Liverpool team. But whether they do that or not, I'm not sure.
Chelsea are in 6th place and are starting to feel a little bit adrift, especially with Liverpool winning last week. They have not got a huge margin of error between now and the end of the season if they are to, as Liam Senior says, still believe, how dare you ask me that question, to get into that top 5 and into the Champions League, which would be an utter failure once again on their parts. They're playing at home to a Manchester United team who lost on Monday night and probably looked a little bit more like the old Manchester United than we've seen under Michael Carrick. United aren't like miles out of things as well. Everybody kind of fancies them to pick up points, but they can't afford to go on like a losing streak. They can't afford to go and do what they would have done this, you know, at this stage last season, or they will fall out of that top 5 as well. How do you see this one going? Chelsea's form is completely, completely absent. But I suppose there is a sort of a feeling they could turn it around at any point. Not that I necessarily buy it.
Yeah, I don't know. For Manchester United, I think I know they barely play these days, but the last couple of games that they have played, I think it's been a worrying
trend.
Yeah, worrying trend, worrying decline in form. And I think the worrying trend has probably put Michael Carrick out of number one contention for the permanent job, even if they do get Champions League football. The way the team was on Monday night against Leeds, where you had Casemiro, okay, he's been really good, with Manuel Ugarte, who we know is just doesn't work.
Yeah. What would you have done though? Because Mainoo obviously was a late withdrawal.
Yeah, I probably would have just put Bruno back. And
when they were chasing the game, that's what they did as well, and let him playmaker.
And even at that, they still nearly got back into the game at 2-0, and the red card was a bit of a joke as well. But the thing for United as well, like at the back they had Yoro Martinez, and Yoro had a really poor game again. I still would keep faith with him because he's young, but United are actually really missing the physicality of Harry Maguire, and he's obviously suspended again now for the game on Saturday.
Is he? Yeah, did he get 3 games?
An added game yesterday.
Oh, okay.
30 grand, but for apparently used the vulgar language walking off the pitch. Harry Maguire completely denied.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry if I don't. They didn't have mics on the pitch, but we all saw enough to know that he definitely did.
So United are probably going to have a centre back partnership of Yoro and Aidan Heaven. Yeah. And Aidan Heaven, who's money's played for Man United, has actually been quite good, and he probably finds himself a little bit unfortunate to be out of the team. But it's a structured team around that. It's a structured team ahead of that as well. It's like Casemiro kind of trying to cover 30 yards of space. It kind of was reminiscent of the Ten Hag era. And then not playing Brian Mbeumo as well. Not starting
him. Yeah, that was a surprise. Yeah.
And also not bringing Mason Mount off the bench. I don't know maybe he still isn't fully fit, but like it was a game for him, or Joshua Zirkzee.
But even when you're 2-0 down at half time, like, fair enough, you're trying something without Mbeumo, who's played every game under Carrick. He doesn't come on at half time then.
Yeah.
I would have thought that was a kind of a basic enough, like, let's get this guy on. He's been our most dangerous player all season.
He's the manager that's made the latest substitutions, apparently, since he's taken over, which doesn't surprise me. He kind of doesn't jump into things, but
that's kind of old school.
It is old school. And he's been forced into this central defensive partnership that you mentioned. I think they're 19 and 20 years of age. That would concern me. Probably concern me more for the Leeds game. It would have concerned me more for the Leeds game, but Martinez is a huge miss. Maguire is a huge miss. It's a really risky one. Alejandro Garnacho was out doing the whole PR brigade last week, saying, oh, no hard feelings and I'm sorry. And I was probably immature in my last days at Manchester United. Maybe just get that in before they played this game.
And then he deleted all his Chelsea social media then as well or something, or he archived it. Like, so he's a joke of football.
It's bizarre.
Do you see anything? You watched that game last Sunday against Man City. Do you see anything redemptive in Chelsea or any signs of what they're trying to do? Or because I don't. I'm completely bereft with them. I think it's worse they're getting every single week at this stage.
No, it is. It is worse they're getting. But the one thing is that Enzo Fernandez is back.
Yeah. In what kind of mood, I wonder?
Yeah, and I think he's kind of playing in a vein of form where I think he's been. I always have said it that he's been one of Chelsea's best players. He'd want to be for over 100 million, but I think he's thinking, I want that move to Real Madrid, or I want that move to Atletico Madrid. I could see him at Atletico Madrid. I think he can definitely cause problems, especially the back of that Man United midfield with Casemiro, and we'll wait and see if Kobbie Mainoo is available. Joao Pedro is a wily centre forward who will cause Yarrow and Heaven problems. So there is avenues for Chelsea to get this.
Yeah,
United
best about can find his form.
Yeah,
Luke Shaw's going to be in trouble.
Yeah,
they've also they've a good record at Stamford Bridge against Manchester United. I think they've only lost.
These games
one
are
of the
wild as well, bizarre. Consistently. Like, that's the other thing. And it's Saturday night, 8 o'clock, which for seemingly for no reason, we kind of can't really figure out why it is. Just find another TV window.
I think,
on a busy weekend.
I think TNT or Oli game or something. I think.
Okay,
it's an extra bonus game. Yeah. Also, Liam Rossignol has said before, boyhood massive Manchester United fan, so he'd be keen to get this one over the line. Remember when he was Strasbourg manager playing Aberdeen?
Yeah.
Talking about the history and love playing this club and blah, blah, blah. So,
interestingly, Bigdad Iqbali came out this morning and was like, we're backing, Liam Rossignol. That's usually before.
Oh, he's just about to go then.
Yeah, you're about to get rid of him. Like, so.
The dreaded
vote of confidence.
It was never going to work,
No. But look, again, it's just like every time I see his press conferences, it's just like it's the same bizarre conversations about we've had a lot of good group conversations and really good training, and it's like it just feels like a computer game or something like that. It feels like when you're doing the FIFA career mode and you have to kind of give the press conference and say how you're feeling. And
Will still.
You're kind of nodding and speaking while the words coming up completely differently. It's just bizarre stuff. It can't work and it won't work.
But then, I could still see them beating Man United on Saturday. Like, it's just one of those ones. United are just so flaky still. And I think that's why, one of the reasons why Carrick ultimately won't get the job.
I actually think just to counter that, if Carrick bounce back, because Leeds was so disappointing, if Carrick bounce back and get a couple of wins in a row here now, it's the first time he's had to deal with a little bit of adversity, losing a couple of games. If he can do that, maybe he shows the board an extra sign of things. It's all right, playing sailing when you win X number of games in a row, but if he can bounce back, win on Saturday night, put them 10 points clear at Chelsea and essentially secure Champions League football, let's be honest. If they win at Stamford Bridge on Saturday night, 10 points,
they'd be too far ahead of Chelsea,
I think Carrick is lucky as well, that where Villa have been up and down of regards form during his tenure, Chelsea and Liverpool have been a bit of a joke as well. So,
yeah. Like, Villa and United are level on points, and it felt like United passed them out with a long goodbye a long time ago. They played each other, that was well over a month ago at this stage.
Yeah.
And they're somehow level on points again. Like, United have not kicked on from that. Haven't won since that game, actually. Yeah. So Villa are playing Sunderland at home on 2 o'clock on Sunday as well. Same time as Everton playing Liverpool. Everton and Brentford certainly won't be giving up internal conversations about getting that fifth spot, and Chelsea United. So a really big week in the top five thing. Just quickly before we go, the relegation games this week. It's a real big chance for Forest and for Leeds. Leeds, obviously, the big win. I think, it puts them... You just don't know. If Spurs could go on a run, their teams could go on a run yet. These teams are... As bad at all as Spurs have been, the quality within these teams, unlike most years, would suggest
the ability for them to, you know, pick up more points than you would expect. If Leeds win this week, they're on 39 points, home to Wolves, it's a big chance. Forest home to Burnley, 2 p.m. on Sunday, brilliant win against Porto. They're into the semi-final of the Europa League. They would love to be looking at the Europa League semi-final against Villa, not thinking about relegation. That's a big chance, and that puts Spurs and even West Ham in a big problem. Spurs dreaded home game, the Zerbi against his old team in Brighton. And Brighton, who've been so up and down this season, are on their best run of form. What have they won? The last three games, I think. They're thinking about Europe as well, because so is everybody. And it's another like disastrous fixture for Spurs.
It is.
Romero's out for the season.
I know you said this earlier, and I always kind of think of it when we're discussing these games, is that when you play a team, it matters so much. Like Spurs didn't only play in Brighton at this moment in time. They would have loved to play Brighton maybe 6 or 7 weeks ago, maybe a bit more. I don't know, like Brighton expect to be in Europe, you know, with their kind of their model, the players that they sign, the age profile of players that they sign. This is a huge opportunity for them to go and win in at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And it's Roberto De Zerbi against his old club. Surely that probably motivates some of those players as well, because I know De Zerbi had a bit of a...
Already them left. Not too many.
Maybe a somewhat strained relationship by the end of his tenure at Brighton. So I just don't see Spurs winning again. Like, Romero's a huge loss. He's arguably their biggest goal threat as well when it comes to set pieces, because he's unbelievable in the air. And it's just been a disaster masterclass of a season for Spurs. And I just can't see them getting out of it now.
The result at Sunderland last week was awful, because you think of Sunderland as where they are in the league, where they've been in terms of their legs recently. The fact that the Newcastle game was basically their wrap up of the season. Now, fair enough, they're in the room saying, let's finish above Newcastle, let's finish as high as we can, and so on. But like, mentally, you can't imagine they're as up for things as they were in August, September,
just
October.
The body language,
mate. And then to go out and just softly lose
11 minutes of added time at the end of that game, and you're thinking, this is the time for your DVD moment, this is, you know, get a point on the board here, and just nothing. They didn't lay a glove on them in that injury time, and it's just so disappointing. It's not even the results from a Spurs perspective, it's the body language and the performances. Like, they're just not, they don't look like they care anymore, with the exception maybe of Archie Gray and a couple of others. But yeah, I'd be concerned, and I actually think West Ham will get
if Brighton do beat Spurs, or Spurs at least even fail to win their first game in 2026, and Forest and Leeds do win, that's a big game on Monday night. And if West Ham do get a win at Palace, which you wouldn't rule out,
and the Palace players dancing through the streets of Florence last night, I saw Dean Henderson I don't know if they're on the beer, but they were certainly dancing through the streets late.
They have an extra day, but it's still Thursday, Monday. They still would have had a midweek game. Palace with nothing to play for. And if West Ham do that, Spurs are looking adrift.
Oh, they're gone. They're not gone.
If all three of those teams win this weekend and Spurs don't, big trouble.
Brighton won 4-1 against Spurs in London last season. So there's a good omen.
Here we go.
Wow. Well, that was a Spurs team that finished 17th. It could be 18th this year. Yeah. Okay, that's it. We'll be back next week with another look ahead to the Premier League weekend. Thanks for joining us.
Inside the Odds on Off the Ball with NoviBet. Get up to 50% boost on all bet builders with NoviBet. Download and play today. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.